Welcome to the Podcast Potables Network. You're listening to Punches and Potables, brought to you by the Andrew Boss team at Berkshire Hathaway. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a five-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter and Untappd at Process Potables, and on Instagram at Podcast Potables Network. Check out our other shows, namely Post Game Potables, our new pod coming to you immediately following every Eagles game, Power Bombs and Potables, our weekly professional wrestling podcast, and the flagship show, Process Potables. For news, blog posts, info on breweries we've worked with, and more, check out www.processpotables.com. Punches and Potables is on tap. Cheers, everybody.
Welcome back to Punches and Potables, everybody. I am your host, Paul Ryan, back with my regular co-host, Rob Huber.
What is going on, everyone?
And apparently people like this guy a little bit, so we brought him back again today. My little brother, Sean Hardy.
You're still a fraud for calling yourself Paul Ryan.
The host's so nice, we brought him back twice. All right. So what are we going to do, Paul?
We're going to punch open these beers.
All right.
And get things rolling. What you drinking today?
Let's count it up here. We got a nice fake radio war. It's from Forgotten Boardwalk Brewing, right in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, so nice and close to home here. It's a West Coast Indian Pale Ale, which is usually a go-to for me when it comes to a style of beer.
Nice. I'm drinking a Stone XO Cerveza. It's an Imperial Stout inspired by Mexican hot chocolate. And I, you know, when I do drink and I do beer, I do prefer stout, so cheers.
Cool. Cheers.
First thing we're going to talk about is the fights that just happened this weekend. I'm going to break down one or two real quick. The first one would be James Krause versus Claudio Silva. James Krause got a unanimous decision win. It was a close fight, but clear that James Krause won. He seems to be more interested in coaching than fighting, so I don't really know what to do with him right now. So we'll just take it as it comes. The next one was the knockout win of Jim Crute over Modestas Bukauskas, and that was a very clean knockout. He slid that punch and caught him with a flush right and put him to sleep. We'll talk about what's next for him because there's a fight this weekend that I think he could get the winner of. But now we're going to open up the first fight for discussion for all of us would be Caitlin Chookagian versus Jessica Andrade. I'm going to open this up by saying Jessica Andrade broke a record, being the first female fighter to win a fight in three different weight classes. And she did get a performance of the nice bonus, so good on her.
Very notably, I mean, easily, I guess I should say, did she get that bonus? It's no secret that she clearly looked stronger, 10 pounds heavier, that obviously this wasn't as stressful on her body when it came to the physicality and the toll it would take trying to drop those additional 10 pounds. Man, did she just came in, like, just at the weigh-ins, and then especially rehydrated and on fight night, she looked incredible. Like, clearly, this is the better weight class for her. She went in, and it obviously made the difference because she dominated from start to finish.
All right, kid, what do you got?
She lined herself up for an immediate title fight. She won one fight,
absolutely,
jumped right into the mix. The 125 is already a terribly weak division, so a big win over someone who just lost her initial title bout, it's got to put her right in line to fight Shevchenko.
Yeah, coming right up and fighting the number one contender and finishing her in the first round with body shots was definitely a way to put yourself in the conversation.
Absolutely, and that's my favorite part about it. I think on both podcasts that I've done so far, so the first and second episode with us here, I've mentioned body shots. They've always been a big thing for me. I of course, love a good knockout, a good TKO, but when you can get that accomplished by driving that force, whether it's a strong kick or whether it's that cross right into the body, for her, it was a knee. She nailed that knee right into the solar plex, and I love what DC was saying in the octagon with her afterwards. She's such a smart fighter. You can tell she's well-seasoned. You can tell that she is definitely a veteran of the sport because, as he said it, she didn't go headhunting afterwards. That's what I think a lot of people do. They see they're injured and they go right for the head, literally. Instead, she jumped up and threw double knees right into her solar plex to only definitively put her down and take her breath away, not in the nice way. But then she landed the counter strikes with, you know, right to the head, ending it. But, I mean, wow, just that ring awareness to say it's obviously her body that's hurting. She audibly had to go, ugh, and almost, like, lost all of her air. So to go right back to her body afterwards instead of trying to go for the TKO to the head, brilliant. She killed it. Absolutely dominant performance.
Yeah, she definitely lined herself up for the winner of Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia fight. But, Sean, what do you think's next for Caitlin, potentially?
She's probably going to get the loser of that Joanne Calder fight coming up. She's got to. You figure Joanne, if Calder would win, she shuts, or whoever wins that fight, sets himself up for probably next in line, number one contendership. Caitlin probably should fight the loser of that, in a sense, to put whoever loses, essentially whoever wins that fight between the loser, puts themselves right back in line. Because as I said 20 seconds ago, the 25 division for women, and men for that fact, is just a weak division. Any bit of winning streak, any bit of star power, highlight knockout, it's probably going to put you right up there for a title shot.
So Caitlin versus the loser of JoJo versus Jessica Eye. Could be good.
I couldn't remember who she was fighting, to be honest with you. I mean, Jessica Eye is still a relatively big name, but let's face it, any other division, Jessica Eye is probably an afterthought. She's up at the 35 like she was. She's not competing for a belt. She's competing for a back end of the 15 fight. So the fact that she's even down at 25 right now competing for a potential title shot explains you how weak that division really is.
All right, now jumping up to the main event, the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung Jung, versus Brian Ortega, and this was a one-sided fight, and it does hurt because I'm such a fan of Zombie. But Ortega, taking those 2 years off and working on his stand-up, just jumped him up to another level.
It was very disappointing for me as well. Not to say that I was rooting for one or the other, but with how many strong finishes, and Zombie has like a lot of like fight of the night like bonuses as well, if I'm not mistaken. Usually it's a very strong performance. I don't want to say he rushes out there to get the job done by any means. Like, he's still very much a calm, collective fighter, but who just takes the opportunity when he sees it. And I don't know if it was maybe just Ortega really not giving him any opportunities, or if there was some type of fear or mind aspect, you know, what was going on. But it just did not look like the same Zombie that we typically see in the octagon.
Well, anytime Zombie did start getting momentum, Ortega would hurt him with a big shot, and then Zombie would have to reset.
As much as I love to say it, and I'm going to say it, I told you so. Okay? I told you last week that Ortega was going to come in and dominate him, and he did. Let me just read you the numbers. Ortega, 2 knockdowns to 0. 129 total strikes to 64. So he doubled him. 127 significant to 62. Doubled him. Ortega came in and showed why he deserves to take on Volkanovski and why he really is, I guess you could say, the number three fighter in the division, talent-wise, behind Max Holloway and Volkanovski. And I think, sorry, real quick to you, Rob, and I think his jiu-jitsu can actually heavily counter out Volkanovski's wrestling.
I have to take back a statement. I was actually rooting for Ortega because I forgot that last minute I did decide to pick up just the overall win of him winning over Zombie, and I made some money off of that. So I was rooting for him. However, it wasn't like one fighter over the other. I do really, really appreciate and love Zombie's style in the octagon. I think he's still a dominant force to be reckoned with. I think this was maybe just a little bit more of a wake-up call for him that he needs to go back and re-examine. But based off of some of the things that you just said, Sean, in terms of your placement of Ortega, so Paul, where do you think he lines up with that, and who do you think is next in line for him, if not being number one contender?
All right, well, first I'm going to talk about Ortega real quick. I definitely think he gets the shot at Volkanovski next. And to rewind from last week, I don't think I gave Volkanovski enough respect because he did beat, in my opinion, three of the top five featherweights of all time in Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, and Max Holloway. But going forward for Chan Sung Jung, there's a lot of people he could fight. Max Holloway is sitting out there right now, coming off of two losses in a row to Volkanovski. That could be fun. You have Zabit. I'm not even going to try to say that last name because it's ridiculous. You have a potential rematch with Yair Rodriguez, but I think a fun fight to make right now for Zombie would be Calvin Kattar.
I think that's a fun one. Has he, because I'm really trying to think of his past opponents, has Zombie ever faced Holloway?
No, they have never faced, because when Holloway was on his rise, Zombie was still over in Korea doing his mandatory military.
That's what I thought. Yeah, no, that would probably be the one based off of both of their styles where, but I think I would need that one as a five. Like, that would have to be maybe a fight night, which is weird to say for Max Holloway, but like a main event five-round fight, because both of those fighters kind of start out with the first round or two feeling the other fighter out before they start making a lot of momentum. That's both of their styles for the most part, especially more so Holloway. So if we could get a fight night with Zombie versus Holloway and get a five-round main event fight, that would be killer for me to see.
I think Max honestly might sit out to see what happens between Ortega and Volkanovski, because if Volkanovski drops the belt to Ortega, he can slide right back in there. But we'll talk about that another day. Moving on to our next topic, it's a big name that's floating around. It's got a lot of hype around him, and that's Khamzat Chimaev. What do we do with him? Because apparently now there are two people who are answering the call and the call out after he put out people's names that said he turned them down. Well, first it was supposed to be Damian Maia, and that fell off. Then he said it was Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson turned him down. Then he said it was Jacare, but before I get into back of that, Jacare is so disrespected right now because they just booked him to fight the 13. That guy has always been a top five fighter in that division. He left for one fight, and he fought the current light heavyweight champion to a decision. And it was basically a toss-up where I wasn't upset at whoever got the nod, and Jan got the nod. Good for now, but for him to come back, he was scheduled for a top 10 fight against Uriah Hall, and he got COVID, so that got pulled. And then for him to come back and not get a top 10 fight is utterly ridiculous. He should have been booked against Yoel Romero, since those two have a history and a controversial fight. But back to the decision.
That would have been a good one, though.
Khamzat has now had two people answer the call. I'm going to let you two take your shot, because I know you were talking about Magny and you were talking about Weidman. So I'm going to let you two make your cases. And I'll start off with Sean. You start with Weidman.
Well, first off, Khamzat's got to figure out what he is. Are you a welterweight? Are you a middleweight? Or are you just going out there and just throwing down with whoever you can find?
Simple, yeah.
If he isn't middleweight and he does want Weidman, I think Weidman's too big of a step up. I think you're going to run into a potential Sage Northcutt and a couple of the other guys' situation. Who's he beat? You haven't stepped up to competition yet. You haven't stepped into real competition. They should take him slow like they did with Sean O'Malley, give him someone on the back end who's looking into the 15. Actually, in reality, if you want to look at it by rankings, someone like Jacare would be perfect for him because he's not in the top 15. He's a former title challenger. Well, did he get to the title? Always one fight before the title. Never got the title challenge.
He was basically at Bisping status.
So, yeah. So I think for middleweight, Jacare's perfect, because for Jacare, you knock him out, you end the hype train, and you get your name right back into immediate conversation and jump back into that top 15 where he definitely deserves to be.
Hype train is Khamzat himself. I mean, he's getting that, which is kind of funny in an ironic way. He's kind of getting that Conor McGregor cockiness to him, where the way he's talking about other fighters that he has personally called out is getting to a point where I'm even like, all right, maybe slow your roll just a little bit in terms of what you're saying about them. Call out whoever you want, but in terms of what he's saying while calling them out, so what I have here is saying that he'll easily choke out Damian Maia. So he'll take it to the ground, he'll easily choke him out. That he would take down Till in the first round and smash him to pieces. You know, just some of these, I'm just like, all right. Like, you know, I mean, this one was kind of funny. Saying that Nate Diaz needs to get his soft body in the octagon with him. All right, that one's kind of good. I appreciate that, and I would love to see that fight. But no, for me, Magny, I like the path that Magny's on. And like you kind of mentioned with Weidman, I don't personally think Khamzat is there yet in terms of deserving a fight with that big of a name. I think him versus Magny would be a perfect mashup in terms of two guys that are sincerely on the rise. Now, people are focused more on Khamzat than they are on Magny right now, but I sincerely think that they're both kind of at least a similar level, and that Magny could really shut him down and then boost himself a lot further in the rankings if he could do so with a guy who has so much hype. But I also think that Cosmat would be a very good counterfight, you know, in terms of like an opponent against Magny. I think that would be an interesting one to watch in terms of who would have the upper hand between their two styles.
Look, I think all it comes down to is he's got to figure out what he wants to be.
Yeah.
Until he figures out what he wants to be, I mean, you can do this whole jump around thing, but you're never going to be able to get yourself truly ranked. You're never going to be able to get yourself in a title position if you're flopping around from each thing. I don't see him there yet. I think, like I said, what they did with Sean O'Malley was the great thing. Sean O'Malley has the same thing, probably a little bit over the top with his cockiness.
Sure.
You know, he went in, he knocked out a former title challenger, and then I think his next fight was unranked, and he lost his next fight. So, I mean, to say that he should be jumping into the top 15 or top 10 right away, I think Weidman, I just checked, is actually the 9. So to say a guy who doesn't even have a top 15 fight in either division that he's been in deserves to jump all the way up to the 9, I think it's a little nuts.
So should we allow Paul to tell us why we're both wrong?
Oh, I know he's itching for it. He's definitely itching for it.
It's like when you have like a treat like in front of a dog and you're saying, "Don't touch it, don't do it." He's just sitting there, just
you can see his hand going up.
To quote Tom Segura there for a second.
Oh no! I'm completely. I think if they're going to give him somebody, it should be somebody at the back end of the top 15 of either division. He has called out both champions. So I would say if it was going to be middleweight, and if you said Weidman's up to the 9, then maybe somebody like Brad Tavares, who seems to be the guy that everybody has to go through to get to those top 10s, because he's always that guy right outside the top 10, like in the top 15 outside looking in. And Neil Magny might be a good one to start off with the rankings. But I will say this, give Darren Till his credit. He said, screw the rankings after I'm done with Jack, because he is scheduled to fight Jack Hermanson in December. He said, I'll take you on and I'll knock you out. But I don't think the UFC is going to do that one because they still want to push him versus Israel, because if he beats Jack Hermanson, he's probably next in line after whoever wins this weekend, which we'll get to later.
I will say I'm very excited for that one, though, the Hermanson fight. Like that's one, when I saw that those two were fighting, I'm actively just like super, super hyped for that. I think that's going to be such a good one.
All right, moving on, because another one with a hype train, and the UFC did this to themselves. They brought in a former Bellator champion and put him right into the title talks right off the rip. So now he has some, you know, shine and attention on him, even though he's done nothing in the organization. So now that he's not going to be filling in for either one of those, what do they do with him? Now, before we get into that, I will say they did offer him a fight this weekend because RDA had to pull out in his fight against Islam Makhachev because he got COVID. So there was an open spot for Michael Chandler. He chose to decline against the number 12. But since he didn't take the fight, what do they do with him?
I mean, I know we discussed this a little bit earlier. I agree that Mike Chandler should not have taken that fight. If you're going to pull him from Bellator, and I know you just made the comment that he hasn't done anything in UFC, which I get it. UFC is kind of like the major leagues when it comes to, you know,
this side of the world. The other side be one championship.
Exactly, yes. But, you know, it's kind of like to do our fellowship podcast of Power Bombs and Potables. You know, it's kind of like the NXT to the main roster. You know, like, I get that, but when you have such a notable career in Bellator the way that he did and the path that he took and the amount that he's done in that organization, I don't think it's necessarily unfair for him to be brought in, maybe not for the title, but I don't necessarily think that he also, like, when you're bringing him in for the title and saying that if one of these guys can't make it or gets COVID or whatever reason, you're the guy that's going to fight for the title, why in the hell would you accept a 12th ranked fighter? If they're saying, hey, we already believe you're at this level, and then they're going to be like, well, hey, if you want to fight, you know, below 10th ranked, why would you do that? It's a smart move, not only just in terms of where he's at and how good of a fighter he is, but also on top of that, what if he were to get knocked out or submitted by number 12? then his whole entire hype of coming over from Bellator and possibly having a title opportunity right off the bat if one of these guys couldn't, you know, win and he could get an interim belt or whatever the case may be, that's all gone if he loses to number 12. It's done right there. His UFC career and debut is 100% done in the event that he loses to number 12. So I think it's a smart move career-wise.
I don't think they want to make the same mistake with Chandler. If I'm Chandler and I'm working with Chandler, I would set him up for a fight night. Bring him in for a fight night, put him around, fight the five, maybe the six or seven, you know, roughly like him and Felder headline a fight night somewhere along the sure. line or ESPN Plus, because I don't think they want to make the same mistake they made with Will Brooks. Will Brooks came over, major hype train, beat Chandler twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then came to the UFC and flopped.
Yeah.
So I think with Chandler, though, again, he's got the great hype train behind him. He's got a win over a former UFC champion and Eddie Alvarez and Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
So I understand why you want to push him. However, I'm not saying pump the brakes fully on him, but I think it was a bad idea to now introduce him as the fill-in guy, because now you've shot his stock way higher than it necessarily had to be. Look, like you said, he's got a great resume, but he doesn't have a great resume in the big boy league. So when you bring him over, you know, most of the Bellator's competition, lightweight-wise, is former UFC fighters who were on losing skids to get over there. So I think him against a Charles Oliveira or Paul Felder would actually be a perfect testing. It would be a great win for him, especially Paul Felder, no name. It would be a great way for him to get introduced into the UFC. And not only that, it would be a great testing ground for him, because if he beats Paul Felder, then, you know, you got to be legit to beat Paul Felder. You do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then he moves forward, jumps into that top four conversation, and that's when you catch a guy like Tony Ferguson's attention or Dan Hooker. I think Dan Hooker's the five right now. So you catch one of their attention, it makes your title shot a little bit more legitimate, I think.
My thing is, he's coming over with the bigger name. However, if you're looking at wins and losses, Justin Gaethje came over as the undefeated champ of World Series of Fighting. And when he came in, he only got the 7 or 8 in Michael Johnson in his debut. I understand that Eddie Alvarez, I'm sorry. Michael Chandler has the name and the hype, but he should still have to prove himself against one of those guys. Now, Paul Felder and Charles Oliveira would be great. It would be fun fights, but there's also one. I know he's the number 9. He's a little bit further back than probably Michael Chandler would like, but I feel a 5-rounder on, like you said, a fight night against Ally Aquina would be a fun fight. If Kevin Lee was available, I understand he's the number 10, but he's up at TriStar up in Canada training with Vras Sahabi, George St. Pierre, and Rory McDonald. And I think one day he will be a champion because he's still young. But he is not available right now because he had to go get reconstructive knee surgery. But I understand Charles Oliveira and I understand Paul Felder, but I think, in at least my opinion, the way to go for Michael Chandler would be Ally Aquina, because he has that name recognition because he did fight for a title against Khabib. Granted, it was off of weird circumstances, but he still had that title fight.
And I mean, I'm 100% on the Mike Chandler hype train. I'm all for it. I mean, we went and watched a Bellator fight. You know, unfortunately, that fight night did not go. Well, I shouldn't say fight night because it was Bellator, but that night did not go as I had hoped for him.
Foot.
Yeah, that's when he snapped his foot or his ankle or whatever by those low leg kicks. I mean, it was devastating. I didn't like watching it. It was a doctor stoppage, I'm pretty sure, as well. But either way, before we even went to that Bellator event, I've always been a big Mike Chandler fan. I just love his style of training. I love his mentality. I hate his politics. But everything about him, mostly as a person and his train, well, I should say as an athlete, as well as his fighting style and his aggression in the octagon, I'm a big, big fan. Still, do not think for any reason that they should have put him as the contender of Khabib versus Justin in the event that one of them couldn't fight. I wasn't on board with that. But now, if that's what the UFC did, and it is what they did, again, my whole reasoning is when you're saying, well, why didn't he take this fight this weekend if he was prepared and he was at Fight Island? Again, I think it's just more of a career move. If you're his talent agency or any his manager or anything like that, and you're saying, okay, they were going to put you in an interim belt potentially, but now they want you to fight number 12, I just don't think it's a smart move. Felder, I do like that one, just basically because I'm not personally a fan. I know he still is a qualified fighter, and I do think it would be good for Michael Chandler to knock him out. But
taking away your Philly South Jersey card.
Yeah, whatever. But, you know, I don't know. He's just never truly, like, overwhelmed me or impressed me to the point where, like, I care too much about him. And I think it would be a good first one for Mike Chandler to go in and, you know, take advantage of the situation.
Well, the other guy that I like is the number 15. Give Cowboy a couple months off and bring Cowboy back.
Yeah, I would live for that fight.
It's huge name recognition. It's if you beat Cowboy, you're obviously
sure
a top-tier fighter. And you're putting yourself in the fire, I guess you could say, but you're not jumping all the way in, because let's face it, I think I know you guys probably won't necessarily fully agree, but I think Cowboy's probably a fight away from getting sent to Bellator in that sense.
Well, now we know that Sean didn't listen to episode what, two or one?
One.
One, yeah.
Oh, dude, it was weeks ago, all right? All right, get over it.
Rude.
Cowboy's going to Bellator if he loses one more fight, and wouldn't it be perfect for the guy who just came from Bellator to send him there?
Oh my God, that's some WWE stuff, and I like it.
But it just sucks for Islam Makhachev, because it's so hard for him to get a fight. Him and Gregor Gillespie, people seem to avoid. And it sucks for RDA, because you know what? That guy just shows up to fight. And I felt it was disrespectful to him that he didn't get a top 10 guy coming back down from welterweight. Because if you look at his resume, nobody has had a harder schedule than RDA. Nobody. It's just he should have had, I'm not going to say top 5, but he should have had a top 10 fight coming back down.
You also don't know what they offered him. You don't know if the like offers weren't on the table, too. He might have chose that way to get himself back coming down from welterweight. It probably was a smarter move on him rather than jump into a top 5 fight, top 10 fight. You're coming back down. He struggled with his weight cut when he was the champion, so maybe this was a test run to see if he can get there. It's still a relevant guy.
No, RDA said he had no right to turn down a fight because he's on a bit of a skid, so he took the first fight they offered him. But moving on, speaking of Bellator, most of Bellator's top fighters are former UFC fighters. But you have some, like a Michael Chandler, who just moved over to the UFC, who are talented. Now, I know we all agree on one, which we'll get to, but is there any Bellator homegrown fighter who we think could come over to the UFC and make some noise?
It's got to be Patricio. He just beat the guy who they were about to put in for the title fight. He just beat Chandler for the belt. How is he not UFC bound? But hasn't he pretty much spent his whole career pretty much in Bellator? Both brothers, really.
Well, Patricio was holding the 45-pound belt when he beat Chandler. He just vacated the lightweight belt to drop back down to 45.
Right, but my point being is, all right, he's a dual weight champion, and he just beat the guy we were using as a fill-in for the title fight. Patricio could absolutely make the jump. Actually, if Dana White wanted to do a crossover fight, I would love for it to be him. You know, he'll never do it because, God forbid, Dana loses. There goes his whole brand as being the top weight fighter. He already tried this years ago with Pride. I think Liddell went over there and got destroyed by Shogun, maybe? I forget who it was.
It was supposed to be Liddell versus Vanderlei, and it never happened.
Okay, I thought it did happen. I thought he lost.
It happened. Vanderlei and Shogun both happened, but when UFC bought Pride out, he beat Vanderlei, but he lost to Shogun.
Right, but either way.
Even then, though, I mean, I get that, like, that one fight would be like, oh, is Bellator the superior brand? Again, we're talking, like, WWE antics of, like, you know, SmackDown versus Raw. It's just like, oh, well, like, this person came over from SmackDown and beat the WWE champion on Raw. It's just like, all right, but, like, everybody still watches Raw more than SmackDown, at least more recently, I think SmackDown's, I don't know, ask Corey. But either way, listen to Powerbombs and Potables. It's our weekly WWE podcast. But like, still, I mean, even if that fight was to happen, that cross-brand fight, I don't think anyone would realistically still be like, oh, well, like, Bellator's a superior brand, because, like, we've already mentioned a couple times, I mean, and I'll admit, when he asked this question about who else from Bellator who's been Bellator-bound and would come over to UFC, I'll fully admit that most of the people I know from Bellator are ex-UFC people, so, like, I can't even answer this question, honestly, and at that point, I mean, I think, yeah, one fight, cross-brand promotion, put that up, even if UFC were to lose, so to say, and their fighter were to lose, I still don't think anyone would be like, oh, well, Bellator's a superior brand, give them the better time slots, you know, no, it's never going to happen.
Well, the other name that it's circling right now is Vadim Nemkov, because he just beat Ryan Bader for the light heavyweight title, but I think it's still kind of early, especially since Ryan Bader is still the heavyweight champion. Like, there are guys who are in there, like Ryan Bader, Phil Davis, Lyoto Machida, and, like, a few others. I don't think he'd ever be, like, title-bound, but he would still be relevant.
I don't know. I think Machida's on his back end. I think he's right where he should be.
But there are some guys on there, you know, that, like I said, that aren't. Gegard Mousasi could still be a top-ranked guy in the UFC.
Oh, he's still probably top five if he's over here.
But there's only one name that truly stands out in Bellator that could come over and be a top contender right away, and that's Douglas Lima.
Yeah, I mean, Lima does have he's the welterweight champion. He holds a win over Rory McDonald. If he goes up and beats Gegard, there's really no doubt. And actually, I think if he goes up and beats Gegard, I think the UFC is going to find a way to send him a fat contract to bring him on over. Outside of that, there's really not too many main... The strawweight champion, or flyweight women's champion, the Hawaiian girl. I can't remember her name offhand.
Yeah. I mean, because the division is so weak, maybe, but I don't know. If you put her in flyweight, she might be able to make some noise, but you got to remember, over in Bellator, they only have two divisions. They don't have strawweight or bantamweight. They only have flyweight, and they only have featherweight, and obviously Cyborg is their featherweight champion. But I don't really think she could come over and compete with Valentina.
Well, you don't. I don't know about Valentina or not, but I'm just saying we're not necessarily saying they're going to come over and be champions. But if they're going to come over and be relevant, I mean, she's got. I think her last couple fights have all been pretty much finishes.
And I think there's something to be said about that. Exactly the point you kind of made there is: does everyone chase the belt? Yes. I mean, that's why you do this, right? You know, like, it's just like any professional athlete. I'm sure there might be some out there. I'm sure there's fighters out there that just do this for the paycheck and are content with where they are. But I'd like to think the bulk of the athletes, yeah, they would want to get to the belt. But relevance versus title contender, yeah, we don't need somebody to come over from Bellator and immediately be a title contender. I mean, that's what they did with Mike Chandler. And again, as a big Chandler fan, I still disagree with the fact that he was even put in that position with the opportunity. So I think it's more or less what you just said, Sean, is, you know, will they still be relevant? Yeah, we're not looking for someone to come over and say, all right, as soon as they come over, are they top five? But if we could get another female fighter to fill out a weak lineup, or if we could get a couple of fighters from Bellator that would come over and would still be just above the top 10, but, you know, maybe, or even just, you know, automatically ranked within the top 10. I mean, yeah, I mean, relevance isn't necessarily just meaning that we need people to come over and fight for a title instantly.
Yeah, and I think you could also go with, Daniel Strauss. Daniel Strauss has a win over Pitbull. I mean, he's actually fought him four times. He's been a champion. He's also lost to Pitbull three times, which brings us back to probably your most UFC ready, I would say, is Pitbull, dude. I understand. I like Douglas Lima. He beat Rory McDonald. And he beat Rory McDonald handily, but he also lost to Rory, too. And Rory, I think Robbie Lawler ruined Rory.
But I think Douglas Lima could come into the UFC right now and beat the number two or three ranked guy in Masvidal.
I talked about it a little bit last week. I think Masvidal is the very overrated number three. He's got two career knockouts. I mean, really, what boosted him to the three was beating a Nate Diaz, who was, was he even ranked at the time?
He was. He was like 14 because he just beat Pettis.
So he's the number 14 welterweight. And then beating Askren, who was probably like the 7 or 5 maybe roughly, an undeserved five, another guy who came in with a bunch of hype fighting in other organizations and really got a fluke win over Lawler and then dropped three in a row, two in a row?
He beat Lawler, then lost to Masvidal and Maya, and then was gone.
Right, so there you go. Even more of a reason. So, I don't know if Douglas Lima can jump right in.
But if I think he could beat Masvidal, and if he beats Masvidal, he's right in.
Yeah, I think, again, Masvidal is an overrated three, and he's there because of the fan hype, the street Judas, the whole thing. I think there's fighters behind him who could actually handle him relatively easy.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's street Jesus. The only one who calls him street Judas is Colby.
Whatever, dude. Tomato, tomato. Yeah,
all right.
Let's not bring him back into the topic.
The only one who calls you Paul Ryan is you.
Half of our family, don't go there.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
All right, moving on to the big one, the pay-per-view this weekend. The return of Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje to unify the lightweight title. Go ahead, crack it.
Punch it.
All right, we're going to break some of them down. We have a light heavyweight fight. I think Jim Crute should fight the winner of this fight, and it is Magomed Anilev versus Ion Kuntelaba. Now, this one, they fought each other in their last fight, and Magomed won, but it was very controversial. Now, he had Ion hurt with three head kicks, but Kuntelaba was still on his feet, and he was still throwing bombs, and for some reason, the ref stepped in and stopped it. And obviously, not only did the fighters and fans disagree with that decision, the organization disagreed with that decision enough to reschedule that fight right away.
I mean, I understand why the ref stopped it, because when you watch a guy get kicked in the face clean three times and just try and windmill your arms as haymakers, you're probably still out on your feet. You're going off natural instinct, and he was trying to save the fighter from himself. So I understood the stoppage. I'm not saying I'm not one of the people who probably watched it and said that was definitely early, but after I seen the replay, it was kind of like, you know what, maybe he saved him from himself there. But it's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, they had that whole heated confrontation inside the octagon where they got chest to chest. So I'd like to see it again, maybe go a couple more than, 40 seconds or whatever the whole fight yeah. was. So maybe give them 2 minutes out of it.
No, you touched on exactly what I was going to bring up is just the amount of time of the fight. You know, I think this is a great matchup. Obviously, there's some bad blood, a controversy. There's a story to it. These two haven't been letting up on it either when it comes to the media aspect as well. So it's definitely going to be a good one in terms of just the overall, you know, the hype of these two fighting, the controversy. It's all there. It's something that you want to watch. It's going to be a great one to start off the main card, especially. I love the placement of these two fighting for this upcoming weekend as well. They've made the main card. I think it's well deserved. But to start out the main card, I think it's a great decision. I think this is going to be one hell of a fight to start off the card.
Don't blink, because I think these two guys are going to go in, and they're going to go in headhunting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's not going to be any hesitation from either. If there is, I'm going to be pissed off, because I literally can't agree more. I think these two are just going to run in, you know, head first.
That's sometimes the worst thing, though, when you get the striker versus strikers, and you're like, yo, this fight's going to be crazy. They're going to go out and slug. And
then nothing.
And they just stand there, because they're both scared to go out there and slug and get knocked out.
Ngannou, Derek Lewis.
Look, there's very few fights that I think were worse than GSP, Jake Shields. Yeah, I hope that hurt. That was up there.
Cheap shot. But moving on to the next fight, it was supposed to be the number 5, Lauren Murphy versus Cynthia Calveo, who I believe was a number 4, but Cynthia pulled out for undisclosed reasons. So now Lauren is taking a risky fight against a unranked person, Lilia Shakirova. And with the flyweight division being as weak as it is, you would think these girls would be a little bit more hesitant to take these risky fights because they don't want to lose their spot. Because as you saw over the weekend with Andrade, it only takes one fight for somebody to take your spot.
Yeah, but I mean, Andrade wasn't that far behind, you know, the number one contender. I mean, with her resume as it is, I mean, this one's a risk for Lauren Murphy. I mean, like you said, an unranked fighter just coming in, taking it. I mean, what an opportunity for, was it Lilia? I honestly don't know, but just, you know, yeah, Lilia. I mean, what an opportunity for her. Like you stated, with one fight, you can boost your career and make a big name for yourself. Great opportunity for her. However, looking at, you know, the statistics between the two of them and their career and all of that, I don't think that I have anything to be concerned about for Lauren Murphy. I think that she's going to go in there and do what she needs to do. I just don't think that it's still necessarily a smart move. But again, it's you're on the main card. You're not going to give up that spot. They give you somebody to fight, and you're on the main card. You said she's ranked number 5, right?
Yeah, Murphy's the 5.
Yeah, so, I mean, at that point, you're not going to tell Uncle Dana no. Like, you're gonna keep a fight.
Well, Murphy's the 5. She's coming off a big win against a fan favorite over Roxanne Modafferi. I haven't met anybody who doesn't like Roxy. Most people don't think she'll ever win the belt, but there's not anybody who I've ever met who said they don't like her and don't tune in to see her.
Well, sure. I definitely agree. I'm one of those people that would think it would be quite a stretch to think of Roxy as a title contender, let alone an actual UFC champion. However, yeah, nobody hates her. She's this weird, lovable, you know, anime, you know, loving character. She really is. I mean, especially when she shows up to her weigh-ins and like some of the outfits are like the wigs
Super
and things.
Saiyan
yeah,
hair.
The Super Saiyan hair. That was absolutely killer. But I mean, nobody hates her. It's just I just don't think that she's going to be a contender.
I literally just had to Google who Lilia was.
Yeah.
And she fought in some her last fight was in Gorilla Fighting Champions.
Is that where Paige Van Zandt wound up?
I have no idea. It's in Russia. It was in Russia. I was actually half expecting her to be an Invicta fighter, but apparently not. For Lauren Murphy, I mean, look, she's won 3 of her last 4.
Yep.
And let's be real, I can't imagine being in a very underpromoted division in the 125 women's that she's getting paid an absurd amount. She's got to get the paycheck, dude.
Oh, absolutely.
She's got to pay her trainers, so I can't blame her for taking the fight. And I'll be real with you. If I'm her, I'm getting this random lady. I understand it. Look, you always have a puncher's chance going into a fight. I understand that. But, like, let's be real here. She thinks she's going to come out here with a win. She probably is going to come out here with a win. I didn't look at the odds, but I got to assume she's a heavily, heavily favored.
That's one with my newfound love of gambling on all things sports, thanks to our producer, Dan Morgan. That if that even shows up, I will probably just put $5 or $10 on it just for the sole fact of being like, oh, what are the odds? +1,000? Sure. Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, what's the worst thing can happen? You lose $5, you're
exactly
not walking
yeah
down the street. So but for Lauren Murphy, I mean, if she wins, she doesn't move. She just sits there.
Sure.
Or if she wins, now she's on a 4-fight win streak.
But yeah, and it's like you said though, but you know, it's from kind of both of us. She's on the main card. She also needs to collect that money. So what are you going to do? You're gonna tell the UFC, no, I don't want to fight this unranked fighter because I'm scared it might mess up my opportunity? No, just you take the fight, you get the payday regardless of you win or lose, and based off of the statistics of it, you're really walking in there thinking that you're going to dominate, win, and then if you can beat the shit out of her enough, I mean, hell, you might get fight of the night and get a little bit of bonus on top of it. So, I mean, is there something to lose? Should I say there's a win-win? No, but, I mean, really, looking at the pros and cons of her taking this fight, I really don't see too many cons.
Yeah, I agree.
The next fight on the main card is a middleweight fight against two really unknowns, which I don't know how they made the main card, and Jacob Malkoon versus Philip Hawes. I really don't have much to say about it, except I don't understand how that fight made the main card over guys like Alex Oliveira, Stefan Struve versus Tai Tuivasa.
COVID.
They're on the card. They're just in the prelims. COVID made no sense there.
Dude, it's 2020. It doesn't need to make sense.
Yeah. Dude, they don't even have a picture of Jacob. Malkoon. He's only 4-0 at 25. His 4-0 must have been a really impressive 4-0. The UFC doesn't even have stats on him at all. 0 wins by KO, 0 wins by submission, so he must have put on some really impressive decisions. Maybe
I don't know. They think they should move them down to the prelims and put Tai Tuivasa and Stefan Struve on the card.
Yeah.
But then you also have to think of programming as well. They want people to tune into the prelims. Are you going to tune into the prelims for a whole bunch of fighters that are unranked or that you don't know whatsoever? No, you need some names on there in order to get viewers.
You got Cowboy Oliveira and Sam Alvey.
Okay.
But let's be real. Nobody's tuning into this particular event. Like, sometimes there are stacked events where you have to tune into the prelims. Nobody's turning into this event for anything but the two top fights on the card.
We are.
Well, yeah, that's because this is what we do, and you know.
I was like, we are 100% tuning into this.
Correction, casuals aren't tuning in. The hardcores are, but casuals aren't really tuning in for really anything other than Khabib because they all know Khabib from Conor.
That's fair.
But the next fight on the card is a fairly impactful heavyweight card with the number 7 Alexander Volkov versus the number 10 Walt Harris.
I like this one. I really do. I think this is going to be. Maybe slow to start, but overall, I think that there's going to be a lot to this fight. I think it's going to be a fun one to watch. I really think that these two are going to go in knowing the impact that a win at this position could have on their career. I think it's really going to be just, I don't want to say a slugfest. I don't think that's going to necessarily be the case, but I do think it's going to be an exciting one to watch.
I think it is going to be a stand-up battle. These two guys aren't really known for their wrestling.
Correct, yeah.
But it's going to be the power puncher versus the technician. Can Alexander Volkov keep his distance and pick Walt Harris apart, or can Walt Harris catch him with one of those bombs? Now, I like both guys, but it's hard to root against Walt Harris with everything that's happened to him in his life over the past year with the kidnapping and murder of his stepdaughter.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. And that's where, you know, it's another one like Roxy. It's just kind of... You know, you almost don't want to root against Walt Harris, even if you're a Volkov fan, even if you think statistically or, you know, stylistically that he potentially has the upper hand over Walt Harris. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like that story that's pulling on your heartstrings that you really just want to see him just run up the ladder and just, you know, obviously nothing's going to make up for what happened, but... You know, just trying to find that light at the end of the tunnel of just like, you know, a bright side for this guy and everything he's going through.
You want to see him succeed.
Of course, yeah.
So I'm looking at the tail of the tape, and they're actually a lot closer and everything that I thought. I mean, I guess it's just because of their builds. But even the picture doesn't help. If you look at the picture of their fights, like just looking at it real quick, like they make Volkov look
like
massive.
A giant.
Like, yeah, way taller. And he's got 2 inches on him.
Yeah.
2 inches. But... Look, I like Walt Harris, and you're right. It would be great to see him get his win, walk off in the sunset type deal, and everything work out for him, which I don't think everything truly works out in a situation like that. But I don't think he's going to get it. Volkov did. The only reason Curtis Blaydes was really able to beat Volkov was he was able to wrestle him and hold him down. When they stood up, Volkov was able to open up a little bit on him. Walt Harris, I mean, he likes to just walk forward, and I can't see the giant not just sitting back using that jab and jabbing him to death.
The only example that might contradict you is Derek Lewis, but Derek Lewis is a freak because Volkov was picking him apart it was a 3-round fight, so Volkov picked him apart for 14 minutes till Derek Lewis landed that bomb.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump called.
And he took off his shorts because his balls was hot.
I was just about to make the comment. I'm glad someone did.
But I think Volkov learned from his mistakes, and he will stay on the outside and pick him apart because Walt Harris has also shown he doesn't have the greatest gas tank.
Greatest gas tank, no. Great chin on him, though. He's definitely taken some hits. And like you said, I think that's something that Volkov's going to have to be concerned about is if he... You know, kind of throws a combination, gets out of there, he lands enough significant strikes. Maybe this isn't going to be a TKO-type fight for Volkov. Maybe this is going to be something that he has to take all 3 rounds in order to get the decision. But one thing he cannot do is sit, plant his feet, stay square, and let Harris just come right up the middle and hit him with really anything. If Harris gets the opportunity to throw his weight into any punch... While Volkov is just square in his stance, it's a done deal. So as long as Volkov keeps moving, he keeps the head moving, he never stays square in his stance, and, you know, he just th- throws a combo, gets a significant strike, gets out of there, and then just, you know, keeps the pace working around the octagon, he'll be fine. But if Harris can land him up against the octagon at any point, it's a done deal.
I think Volkov's going to use his jab and his leg kicks to keep him at range and just pick him apart that way.
See, I honestly don't think, I mean, like, granted, I made the comment on episode 2 that leg kicks and kicks in general have become such a predominant force in terms of damage in the UFC. Over the past 5 to 6 years, more than ever, people have just been throwing more and more and more leg kicks. We talked about it earlier with Chandler at the event that we were at. That's what the doctor stoppage was about, because he couldn't even walk. So I get that they'll hurt. However, there's something about Walt Harris and his prior fights where I'm just looking at him, I'm just like, if he takes some to like the inner thigh or even the outer, I don't think he'll really be affected as much. I think he'll just keep pressing forward and be like, all right, kick me in the leg again and watch what happens.
Well, I guess we'll have to see. But moving on to the co-main event of the evening, and this one has a lot on the line.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of bad blood, but an exciting fight either way, is the return of Robert Whittaker versus Jannon Cannonier.
Man, I feel like, you know, anytime Robbie Whittaker's on a card, I'm pumped. You know, personally, just, I love watching him fight. I won't even say that, like, I prefer seeing him win or lose. I just like watching him fight. You know, it's just personal.
Yeah, look, I like Whittaker. Now, the one thing I will say with Whittaker is he's had a lot of brawls. Mm. You know, them two battles with Romero and then getting knocked out by Adesanya. He took some damage against Till, too.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I thought he lost, personally, the fight against Till. But this is literally, this is your title eliminator right here. It has to be.
Yeah.
You got Whittaker, who's, what, the one, I believe, and
Cannonier right now is the two.
Is the two. So this is your, this is it. Winner of this has, it's getting the next title shot. Or if they follow the rankings, you know, the UFC don't necessarily stick with their own rankings. But
put number 7 in there.
Well, yeah. It's happened. But the thing Whittaker really has to watch out for is the power of Cannonier. He's been knocking people out since he came in. And if you remember, he came in and he started at heavyweight. So he has knockouts at heavyweight, light heavyweight, and middleweight. And he has wins over Jack Hermanson and Anderson Silva.
This is one where, as much as I do like Whittaker, how we were just talking about, like, kind of technician versus knockout power,
you can admit it, you're concerned.
No, that's what I'm saying, is I don't necessarily consider Whittaker a technician by any means. Like, I mean, he's an experienced fighter. I won't take anything away from him. He's better than most, obviously, based on his ranking.
He's a complete fighter. He's good everywhere.
Exactly, but, like, I don't see him as strictly just, like, you know, okay, if this fight stays standing up, I'm more nervous for Whittaker because I don't think he's that good of a technician and kind of like the, you know, stick and move in terms of if he's going to try and make this stand up, I think that there's a greater risk of him getting knocked out.
Yeah, I'm looking at his last 3 fights. I mean, he's got the TKO over Jack Hermanson. That's a big deal.
Sure.
Anderson Silva, he beat him with a leg kick.
Yeah, I think he tore Anderson's ACL in that fight.
Right, which goes back to your point, you know, 5 minutes ago of how important they are to the game.
Sure.
And his third win, well, I guess, you know, going backwards, his third win is David Branch, which really isn't all that an impressive win. So as far as that goes,
he crushed David Branch. That wasn't even competitive.
Yeah, that's fine. But
that one was decision, though, right?
No, he finished that.
No, he finished you're right. In the second. But as far as you're saying, look, I'm not saying Jared Cannonier's is bad, but I'm saying if you're comparing resumes right now, outside of Anderson Silva, but really this isn't Anderson Silva that you really want on your record. I mean, it's his name, but this isn't the Anderson Silva you want on your record.
No,
but
the highest ranked guy he's beaten was Jack Hermanson, who's right. The 4 right now. But like I said, you got to remember he was coming down from heavyweight, from light heavyweight. At one point, he was ranked at the back end of the top end of the top 15 in light heavyweight. And since he's come down to middleweight, lost the weight, and become more disciplined, he's been a wrecking ball.
Yeah, well, you got to kind of be that way to win 3 fights in a row. I mean, his last 2 losses were Dominic Reyes and Jan Blachowicz, who just fought for the light heavyweight title. So, yeah, that makes sense. But what my point being is, Whitaker's got the experience. He's got championship experience.
Sure.
He's got the drag-you-in-the-deep-waters experience. in the sense of what the battles he went through with Romero.
I'm going to cut you off right there, and I understand what you're going there. But those were five-round fights. This is only a three-round fight.
That's what I was just about to ask. Since you said you took him into deep waters, I didn't know if since it was a co-main, if Whitaker...
No, I understand what you're saying, but my point being is Whitaker was able to take them battles, them brawls, into five rounds, which to me would say a three-round would actually be easier for him because now his cardio is proven for five. His ability to take damage and continue to fight back was proven for five. And again, he's got championship experience, which is something Cannonier doesn't have, and it's invaluable. It really is.
Now, the one thing I'll say about that is, and I don't necessarily think it applies to Robbie Whittaker, what I will say, though, in terms of five rounds versus three, is for fighters, like I was stating earlier with, like, Max Holloway, I think Max Holloway is a fantastic five-round fighter. I don't necessarily think Max Holloway is better at three rounds just because he's notably been able to go five. Because, again, he's someone who takes his time and his patience and takes a round and a half to two rounds in order to kind of feel somebody out. Again, not so much something that I think for Whitaker, but just something to throw out there since you mentioned the fact that, oh, you know, he's a five-round, you know, type guy. He's been able to go the distance. When it comes to then going back down to three-round fights, it really depends on your style and who you are as a fighter, because if you're going to take a round or a round and a half to figure somebody out, so you're using half of your time in the octagon to figure someone out and then expecting the second half of the time to go in your favor, you know, for a three-round fight, you kind of got to go into it realizing that, so for a three-round fight, you have to go in realizing that you have less time and you have to make more of an impression on the judges or go in for that kill a lot sooner than you would if you were storing up a little bit of energy and thinking that, okay, end of round two or beginning of round three is where I'm really going to start to open up.
He definitely has to go in with a higher pace, but I think if Robert Whittaker wants to win this fight, he's going to have to use his wrestling. Now, I think Whittaker wins the fight, but I'm pulling for Cannonier because I want to see Cannonier versus Israel because I think it would be interesting.
That would be a really good one.
Well, so I'm looking at the last six fights just for Whittaker alone. He TKO'd Derek Brunson, TKO'd Jacare, who a half hour ago we were preaching should be a top five guy.
Absolutely.
And then decisioned Romero twice in a row for the belts. Then he lost to Asanya and then decisioned Till. Now, three of them went five rounds. The rest of them were all three-round fights. So if you can get yourself up and get yourself ready to fight and TKO a guy like Jacare in the second round, I don't think Whitaker's going to have the problem dropping from five to three.
No, like I said, but I think he should not stand all three rounds with him. If he wants to win this fight, he needs to use his wrestling. But moving on to the main event, the one that everybody's looking forward to,
yes, sir,
is the undefeated Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje.
Look, everyone says the same thing with Khabib. Everyone. I'm going to stuff his takedowns. I'm going to not let him get me to the fence. And I'm going to make him box me. Dustin said it. They've all said it. And you know what happens? He gets him to the fence. He takes him down and he smashes him. Now, Justin Gaethje does apparently have good wrestling.
He does.
I mean, have we really seen it in the UFC? He pretty much stood up, slugged with virtually everybody he's ever fought.
Well, he's never been taken down, so he has that.
Congratulations, that's awesome. But he's also never fought a wrestler at the quality of Khabib. I mean, it's a great accomplishment. I'm not knocking that aspect of it. But my point being is there's only one game plan for Khabib, and that's don't get taken down. Now, however, Khabib was rocked by Michael Johnson when he stood up, and we all know that Justin has much, much heavier hands than Michael Johnson.
And me and you both thought Dustin hurt him.
Yeah, he definitely wobbled him a little bit on the one. Connor hit him with the one pretty clean. That definitely backed him up and kind of changed Khabib's whole I'm going to stand and box with you game plan. So it looks like it is true. If you can hold him up, his hands are suspect.
Exactly. I mean, there's been a few different counts of Khabib getting rocked and exactly that, going to switch his game plan immediately. You know, because as calm, cool, and collective as Khabib is, I mean, obviously Connor pissed him off to a point where we saw kind of a new version media wise as well as after the fight and everything that went down there, which is understandable. As much as I like Connor, I don't like, you know, all of that bullshit, and was almost understandable for Khabib and his team and all of the things that happened. I'm actually more on board with them than I was with Connor. But if we're looking at those fights, there's been a couple times where Khabib has wanted to go in and knock someone out, realized that maybe should not be his approach, and then he took them to the ground and then did what he did best, wrestled a bear. You know, so if Justin can go in and successfully stuff the takedown the way that he has been, again, never been taken down, what an accomplishment, you know, especially being in the UFC. And then if he can somehow pull that off against Khabib, I think he's got one hell of a chance. If it goes to the ground, yeah, I'm going to get nervous. But, you know, I'm not counting Justin Gaethje out of this fight whatsoever.
Listen, Khabib is at the level now where you don't pick against him until you see him lose. However, if anybody right now has the style to beat Khabib, it is Justin Gaethje.
Absolutely.
He comes forward. He has good wrestling. He is a former national champion. He does bring the forward pressure. He does not take a step back, which helps prevent Khabib from putting him against the cage. And over the last couple fights, he has been more patient, and he's been picking his shots, and he's been putting people away. And he said this in his recent interview, Khabib doesn't want to take damage. Doesn't matter when you're in the cage with me, you're going to take damage. If you can get me down after you take damage, good for you, but you're going to take damage while you're in the cage with me.
100%.
He has not gone to a decision. He either puts somebody away or he gets put away. There is no in-between. However, if Khabib wins this fight, it will be by decision.
All right, so that's you're calling that right now, this weekend. You're saying if Khabib wins, it's going to go all five rounds, and then it's going to be decision.
That's how I see it. I'm hoping I'm wrong because I like Gaethje, and I like Gaethje's plan if he wins. He said if he wins, he'll give Khabib the rematch. Then he wants to fight Connor. Then he wants to rematch Dustin Poirier, and then he said he's done.
And I know this gets into our next topic and everything, what's next for Khabib and all of that. However, do you think that that's something that Khabib would even come back for? Maybe I'm getting into this a little premature, but like if Justin goes out and he actually takes care of Khabib, whether it's decision, TKO, I highly doubt it'll be submission, but what the heck, why not? If Justin does that and he's like, yeah, Khabib, you get the first, you know, title opportunity back at me, you know, with Khabib saying that he wants to go 30-0 and he wants to beat Justin and then face GSP, do you even think that if Khabib loses and he goes 28-1 that he'd actually come back for the title?
I honestly don't know, especially with the recent death of his father. I don't know really where his head is at going forward. So I don't think losing right now is on his mind. I'm assuming he's thinking I'll go ahead 30-0, but we'll see what happens.
It only seems like Khabib has one game plan, and we've all just talked about it. But Russell, it only seems like his most successful takedowns come against the fence, which you have to back up for. There's only two guys in the lightweight division who I think threaten Khabib, and that's Tony Ferguson, because Tony's so dangerous off his back. He's incredibly dangerous off his back, and he would actually probably welcome being taken down because he would threaten Khabib, because really, as far as lightweight division go, outside of Charles Oliveira, there's not a ton of jiu-jitsu guys in the lightweight division. It's either stand and bang or takedowns or wrestle. That's really it. Justin seems to be a mix of both. Khabib seems to be a mix of both. Now, hopefully for me, because I am pulling for Justin, definitely. I do think Khabib's going to win, however. Pulling for Justin. Hopefully, much like his teammate in D.C., Khabib forgets that he is a great wrestler and he tries to stand and just loses, like D.C. did in both of his last two fights with Stipe. Instead of worrying about his wrestling, he went in, he tried to box, and he got outboxed. And hopefully Khabib follows the same strategy and Justin puts him away.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's exactly what we just talked about. I mean, how many times has Khabib gone in thinking that he can stand and bang? He's gotten knocked loose a little bit and then decided halfway through the fight, okay, no, I need to take this person down because that one hit made me so scared that, you know, they land another one like that, I could be out for the count, so I've got to take them down and do the thing that I do best. I mean, granted,
They call that going back to father's plan for Khabib.
Exactly. But I don't hate Khabib by any means. I'd love to see him win and then take, you know, the fight against GSP. And honestly, as much as I love GSP, I'd love to see Khabib win that one and go 30-0 and then retire. And it'd be like this whole story. He's one of the greatest of all time. Like, I love it. I really do. However, there's something about Justin Gaethje that I'm just like, all right, I kind of also want him to knock Khabib the fuck out. And it just to be this, like, you know, Justin took out one of the, you know, who was supposed to be the greatest undefeated fighter of all time and, you know, knock him clean. Like, it's like, that's why I love this fight so much. This Saturday is going to be so exciting because I can't wait for this specific fight. I like the whole card. I really do, outside of the one fight we said earlier, which is why is it on the main card. But for the most part, this whole entire card is going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. That main event, I'm going to be, like, completely stressed and filled with anxiety the entire time.
Now, for those who don't know, the pay-per-view starts this Saturday at 2 p.m.
Yes.
Now, moving on to our next topic, what do you do with Khabib if he wins? Because today, he said regardless of who wins between Dustin and Conor, he has no interest in fighting them because he's already beaten them. But, side note, Conor's coach said they're fighting at 170, which is bullshit. Conor hasn't fought a fight at 155 since 2018, and they keep letting him stay in these rankings and fight for titles, even though he's not in the weight class. If he's going to fight for Khabib for the title in the weight class, he needs to make the 155-pound weight limit. That's it. But Conor or Khabib said he's not interested in either one of them. He wants new blood. He wants GSP. GSP is on the fence. He says he doesn't know if he can make the weight, and if he does, he might be compromised because he's never been there before. And he's pushing 40. But on the same note, he says it's a fight and a challenge that he would regret walking away from. And he's not sure the organization would actually want the fight.
So, I mean, first of all, Conor doesn't deserve it. Let's be real. I'm a Conor McGregor fan. He doesn't deserve it.
If he beats Poirier at 55, not 70, yeah, well, he might.
Exactly. That there's no reason that if there's this catch weight fight or we're gonna fight for charity at 170. No, I mean, if you're not gonna cut the weight and do the damn thing right, then you don't deserve the title opportunity. It's just that simple. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Conor McGregor when it comes to his in the ring fighting style and who he is as a fighter, not a person as much anymore. I do like him as a whiskey maker, but I don't.
Jameson's still better.
All right, so I like Conor McGregor in the octagon, but I don't.
It's enough out of you.
I don't like the idea of either one of them being considered if they're going to not fight at 155. But GSP, I see the risk in it. I mean, like, honestly, he'll still go down as one of the greats and a Hall of Famer and everything if he loses to Khabib, but, like, I do see the risk in it. I also see the risk in it based off of just his age, like you said. I mean, like, a weight cut like that is going to take a lot more effort at the age he is now. And then, you know, taking a couple hits from Khabib or being choked out or, like, you know, blacked out unconscious, you know, in the octagon. I mean, at his age, it's not safe. I mean, so what is it? Like, do you really have that much pride that you want to take that fight?
One, he does, and the reward is so high. Think about it. If he comes back and he beats Khabib, he's beaten an undefeated fighter and won a belt in a third weight class. Who's done that?
I mean, he's already one of the GOATs, you know, when it comes to Sean, shake your head. I don't care.
I agree. He is one of the best of all time. I won't take that away from him.
All right, good. So, yeah, he is sincerely one of the best of all time. Like, it's, I know that he won't not be considered double negative, but I understand he will always be considered the best of all time in his own regard, but I don't know. Is the risk worth the reward?
So I hate it. I'll be right off the bat. I hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate GSP coming down. I hate this whole nonsense. To me, look, George, you retired.
Yeah.
You've been retired. Okay, you went up to middleweight. You were going to defend this belt. You were going to win the belt. You were actually getting abused by Bisping's boxing. You caught him with a Hail Mary and managed to choke him out. But much like how Bisping won his belt. So I'm not knocking that. True. I'm not saying.
Don't you disrespect Left Hook Larry when he put out Rockhold?
Look, dude, you know, I've said it before. Bisping's eye issues, he could see everything coming. It was an extreme disadvantage.
He ended Rockhold. Let's be real there.
I'm not arguing that point. My point being is, all right, George is just, you're putting your name in there and you're taking away from actual contenders.
Well, the only reason they said they're considering doing it is because regardless of who wins, the belt would be vacant at the end because Khabib would be walking away.
Look, they don't care about that. That's a nonsense lie they're putting out. You know what they care about?
Sure it is, because then they could slide Conor right into the conversation, win or loss.
That's my point. They care about the finances that would come of it. It's going to sell. It's going to be this big selling event. GSP coming back. Dude, you're 40. You shouldn't have even fought it for the 85 belt. And honestly, I hate when fighters jump the line. I hate it. You've never fought at 55. Now you're coming down. And I understand Khabib wants it because it's a legacy fight. But, dude, you're retired. Stay retired. If you need money, join the commentating team.
He did. He's commentating for the Canadian-French network this weekend.
Oh, thank God. Good for him. So my point being is it doesn't do anything for them themselves. Don't fight, you know, go fight at 65. Go fight at 70 for that matter, where George knows he can make the weight. I agree, George is one of the best fighters of all time. They both have a similar style, the closest thing to gay porn you can put on television, and that's how they fought. You take them down, you hump them into submission, and you call it a day. That's how they fought.
All right, so if it's not going to be George, and he said he doesn't want to fight Conor or Dustin, regardless of who wins, who's next?
Tony. Tony wins one fight, and he gets the fight. It's the only one they haven't fought. They've been scheduled four separate times.
Five.
Five separate, okay, even more the reason. They've been scheduled five separate times. That's the one you make. After that, Khabib's pretty much going to have cleared out 1-4, possibly sitting at 5 because Dan Hooker would really be your next guy, and the dude right off into the sunset right
then
and there.
Well, I think that would be the fight to make then. If he's not going to fight the winner of Dustin and Connor, then it should be Hooker and Tony for the next shot.
Right, I fully agreed.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, we are going to end this episode of Punches and Potables. My name has been Rob Huber.
I'm Sean Hardy.
And this is Paul Ryan punching out for the night.
Have a good one.